Thank you so much for joining Dental Marketing Theory, a podcast by Gary Bird. In today's episode, Gary sits down with Dr. Tariq Ali. Dr. Tariq shares his take on what KPIs matter when trying to grow a successful dental group and how he has applied them to his own DSOs. As always, please make sure to like, subscribe, share, and leave a comment, as all of those things really help to get the word out about Dental Marketing Theory. Hope you enjoy today's show.
All right, we are live and I'm excited about today's episode. But before we jump into that, I need you to do something for me and it takes less than a second. And I need you to promise to do it before I ask you what it is. Okay, good. Go and subscribe to this podcast. We have thousands of listeners, but people don't hit the subscribe button. I don't know why. It takes like 2 seconds. If you're on YouTube, push the button. If you're on Apple Podcast, you just hit the little subscribe button there. If you're on any of the other platforms, they got a little check mark or something like that. Just go hit that button really, really quick. It really, really helps us out. But today I'm excited because we have Dr. Tariq here. He's a serial entrepreneur. We started talking through all the different things that he has going on. And I am super stoked about today's conversation because I love talking with awesome people. And I know you have a lot of different things going on. I'm going to let you talk a little bit about that through your journey. So tell me, how did you get into dentistry? What prompted you to jump into the dental industry and end up where you're at today?
Well, Gary, first of all, thank you very much for having me on your platform. It's really cool and I learned a lot from it. So all of you folks out there, if you haven't subscribed, subscribe yet. Second is my story. So I am originally Egyptian. And if you don't know anything about Egyptian people, if you know about Egyptian parents, they want you to be either a doctor or an engineer or a businessman. Anything else, they are not a big fan of. So they wanted me to be a doctor like them, my brother and my parents. So I was looking, what is the shortest route to be a doctor? And sure enough, I signed up for dentistry, thinking it would be like easy peasy, smooth riding. And then after a few years, I actually fell in love with dentistry. I fell in love with the dental industry in general. I wasn't a big fan of the clinical side. I did the clinical side for 2 years and then I decided, you know what, that's not for me. And I started doing business classes. I got an MBA, a CVA, marketing diploma, and a few things, a bunch of useless degrees. They're not really useless, I'm joking. But at the end, I fell in love with the business aspect of dentistry, that marriage between dentistry and actually running a business. And I started building and buying practices, ended up with 20 locations with 2 DSOs, and eventually became a partner at CDP. I merged all these locations with CDP. And that's my story in 30 seconds.
That's awesome. So were your parents born in Egypt and then moved to the US, or are they originally from the US?
No, they're Egyptian living in Egypt, and I was born in Egypt as well. And
Cool. That's awesome. So tell me a little bit about that transition coming to the US. How old were you?
I was in mid-20s, and I had just finished the first part or the dental component of my education, and I've done a few business courses back in Egypt, and then I thought, hey, should I? And I did the board exams to be a dentist in the U.S. and went through this whole process, and then, you know, said to myself, hey, should I really pursue my passion, which is growing dental offices? Or should I just be your average Joe dentist? And I decided that, hey, I'm going to do what I love, not necessarily what my parents want me to do. But I'm glad I picked the right choice for me. I feel like this, I would never see myself doing anything else.
Yeah. I'm actually pretty honest. So the plan the whole time was to... Oh, okay. Got it. Okay. So was the plan the whole time to come to the US and practice? Was that the plan?
No, it wasn't. It was actually, I was in love with business in general, and I applied to a few MBA programs, and one in the US actually granted me a full scholarship. So that's what I pursued. And at that time, I was working as a periodontist, spent a year doing that, and then I decided to just go ahead and dive in business.
What were some of the surprises that when you moved to the US and you kind of jumped into business and the medical world, what were some of the things that surprised you that were things that you weren't expecting?
Well, so there's some positive things and negative things. The positive things, I love the structure. The US has a certain level of structure in the business world that is not very abundant in the rest of the world. I love that business people are a lot more aware. They do look at numbers and KPIs, even though, you know, diving in, we think they don't, but they do. Where some of the areas of the rest of the world, it's not really a big, back then, that was maybe 20 years ago, 15 to 20 years ago.
Yep.
So that was some of the pros. And the work ethic is remarkable. When it comes to work, people do whatever it takes to get things done, which I absolutely love that culture, that mentality. Some of the cons is that work-life harmony. I didn't see a lot of work-life harmony in the U.S. Out there in the rest of the world, there's more attention to family time, vacation time, health and fitness, mental awareness, and all that psychological health. In the U.S., I saw less of that. And, you know, I think it's that balance where they stop saying work-life balance. It's not work-life harmony because they shouldn't be equal.
Yeah.
You have family life, you have love life, you have social life, you have health and fitness, you have reasonable financial prosperity. You have all things that you have to look at, but we define success typically as financial prosperity, typically in the U.S. So that's where that con that I found, the work-life harmony.
Yeah. So what would that look like in another country? Like how do other people live that's different? Because I've heard that from a lot of people. So what is that? Are they just not working as much? Or are they not connected to their job as much? Or what is it? How does that look and feel?
It's really about priorities and what you see as valuable. What do you value? So if you look in Europe, for example, they have mandatory days off for businesses to abide by. They have, for team members, they have specific days off for labor and delivery, for sick days. And I mean, look at Spain. They have the siesta in the middle of the day and they take it super seriously. It's not something like, hey, it's siesta time.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily saying this is something good or bad, but the culture itself is more oriented towards a holistic life approach versus, hey, let me just get that, cram in that spreadsheet or see 5 extra patients. So work-life harmony I've seen a lot more abundant.
That's awesome. So now when you started your practice, how did you just know that you were going to build a DSO and all those kind of things? Or did you just jump in and start a practice? How did that happen?
Yeah, from day one, after I decided to get into the business world and study it deeply, that was my intention. I really wanted to scale. I wanted to build a system that I can take to 2, 3, 4, 5 locations. Now, I didn't expect to be a partner at 72 locations. And at that time, I wasn't planning for it, but I knew that I wanted to scale. I wanted to create systems and processes that make me work less and be more impactful. I wanted to have the best quality of care possible to the maximum number of people possible with the highest revenue possible and scale that to have the least amount of involvement on my end as possible.
Wow. So do you feel that most dentists start there or no? I feel like if you made me guess, I would say most dentists start and it's like, hey, I'm just going to open up a practice. Do you feel that most dentists start with that mindset or do they start more with like the mindset that you have?
In my experience, I've noticed that, you know, dentists are technicians. They're tacticians. They're used to step-by-step procedures. We go to school and they tell you, here's how you can do a filling. You do this first, you do this first. So they systemize your life to think in a linear fashion, in a technician fashion. And you approach life the same way. ask a lot of fresh grads, hey, can you read a P&L? They won't know. Hey, what are the latest marketing tactics? They won't know. Hey, how do you motivate team members? They won't know. So most dentists start by survival mode. Hey, how can I make the best filling so the patients don't complain? And then how can I, what, I have a team member? Because they're used to at school, they don't have assistants. Or like, whoa, I have to deal with assistants now. They have lunch breaks. They have needs. They have, they want raises. They want this. So all this combined puts them in a survival mode. They don't think about the future much. They think about how can I keep that fort as best as possible.
Yeah. And then you, as you grow and you learn, some people really enjoy the business side more. I've met a lot of dentists that say, hey, I love dentistry, but I love the business side even more. And I want to try to help more people. And I think that's a really cool transition. And it's a really just about being self-aware and what you want to do and what part of the business you want to focus on. And you have that luxury when you own your own business. So that's amazing. Absolutely. Now tell me about the process. So you built up your organization to 20 locations. You have, you're successful. And then you merged with CDP. Tell me a little bit about that transition and how that felt.
Yeah, so there are basically two DSOs. One was 12 locations, pediatric dentistry and orthodontics. And the other one is 8 locations, general dentistry and orthodontics. And I've known Emmett for years, and we were in the speaking scene in the DSO world. And, you know, we would talk about, hey, we're in the same state. How can we hold hands? And every, you know how that works in dental conferences, every few months, you meet similar people and then you talk about same things. And then I would go back to Emmett and say, hey man, let's do something together. We're in the same market. We see similar patients. We have the same philosophy. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. And then 3 months later, we keep the same talk. And then one day he called and said, you know what? I'm tired of you always asking me about synergies and how do we get things better? Let's do it. And then he said, come on to Denton and let's talk. And that's what happened. We discussed how this would work. And with our friend, Double Tucker, he had 16 locations in Texas. So all three of us dental groups came together in one room and we decided to merge, which is basically equity swap, which is everybody puts their equity in one pot to become one big company. And that's what happened. And since then, we tripled the value. We've grown so much. We've learned so much. Wow. And we've added a lot of offices. We've partnered with amazing entrepreneurs. We've increased revenue. We've enhanced patient care. So it was great. It was one of the best decisions I've done.
Yeah. So that sounds like an amazing experience. Do you think, feel like your experience is common?
It's, you know, in the dental world, fortunately, we are in an amazing industry where there is high degree of awareness about patient care. There's high degree of awareness on business. There's high degree of, it's not, we always, when I go to these conferences, we always bash the dental industry, but it's, yes, I understand there are some limitations and it's still primitive, but we live in an amazing industry. Everyone's willing to help. I bet you anything, you call anyone, say, hey, can I shadow your team to learn about revenue cycle management? They'll say, yeah. Hop on board, come on in. And that's what I did. Yep. I did that with at least three different DSOs, and they let me in their kitchen to see their cookbook, their how they cook their stuff. And so we do have an amazing industry where there is high degree of awareness about growth and scaling. Now, can it be better? Absolutely. But yes, we do live in a good, prosperous industry.
What do you think some of the mistakes are that people make when their DSOs are growing a little bit too fast?
That is a common problem. We sometimes get distracted by shiny things, like, hey, let me buy that extra office or two. Let me ramp up this project and see what it does. And if you don't have your eye on the ball and you have your KPIs all lined up, you're looking at them frequently, you're using this data to do a feedback mechanism and influence your processes and systems, then what commonly happens is you either overinvest in some of your central support, which you become top heavy. Yeah. It happens. Or the complete opposite, which you don't invest in any of it at all and just keep adding a growth or locations, and you end up with very poor central support, which is the most common that I see.
So what are you, what KPIs are you looking at on a daily basis to ensure that doesn't happen to you?
Oh man, what is life but a bunch of KPIs, right? You've asked the KPI guy. I love KPIs. I have so many presentations about KPIs out there. Basically, there's three major components. There's the strategic KPIs, there's the operational KPIs, and there's the financial KPIs, which is the pillars of a healthy business. Strategically speaking, where are you going? What's your target markets? What are your patient care milestones? How big is your group? How many locations you want to go? What the specialty serve? What are the specialty serve? How many team members hired? Your target revenue, your EBITDA, your dividends, your equity, your net worth. All these are strategic KPIs. And then you move on to the operational KPIs. Well, you want to track your trend of new patients. You want to track the working hours. You want to track the total patient seen. You want to track the average care per visit or production per visit or however you want to call it, average care per day. Your RCM metrics, the collections percentage, adjustments percentage, DSO, which is days of sales outstanding, and aging. Your care by specialty, care by hour, which is production by specialty.
So these are all like amazing KPIs. But what, in your experience, do most people just have access to these right away, or are these kind of hard to pull for some dentists?
They are definitely hard to pull, especially in. In our industry, we are plagued with poor practice management softwares because they evolved to just patch. It's patchwork for years and years. So they're not geared to actually give you a lot of this data. You can start small. Remember, you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great. You don't have to have all the bells and whistles and all fancy tools and all. You can have an Excel spreadsheet or a Google spreadsheet.
So where would you start? Where would you start? Give me like something, somewhere somebody would start. Like if you don't have any KPIs yet, where would you start?
Sure. Let's say, first of all, you have to have your strategic KPIs, right? The ones I mentioned in the beginning, because they're easy. They're very general.
Yep.
You're shooting for the mission. Then if you're going into the operational KPIs, look for the main stuff. Number of new patients. Who doesn't want to track that? Your production collections, your RCM metrics. RCM is the core, one of the core functions of the business. If you're producing and not collecting, that's a big problem. Production is monopoly money, right? Unless it hits the bank, it never hit anything. So your RCM metrics, which I mentioned earlier, collections percentage, adjustments percentage, aging, and so forth, and days of sales outstanding. Look for your reputation metrics, positive and negative reviews. Watch those like a hawk because that's your reputation. That's how people think of you. You think you're the best in the world. You think you're God, but it's how what the patient perceives what really matters. So your net promoter score, easy to get, one question. Your reputation, positive, negative reviews, easy to get. Number of new patient trends will show you. Remember, trend is your friend. It will show you analysis of month over month, year over year, and so forth. And of course, your financial metrics. Don't forget about spending. If you're not watching what you're spending, like your supplies percentage, your payroll percentage, your doctor payroll percentage, your facilities, and so forth. Your EBITDA, of course. At the end of the day, that's a number you really want to watch.
Got it. So that's awesome. That's really, really helpful. Now, one thing that I've seen that CDP does really well is they push everything back to the clinical side of things. So like, I'll give you an example of where I see people fall in a pit hole all the time. They'll come to me as a marketing guy and I'll say, okay, what kind of patients do you want? And they'll say, Gary, you tell us what kind of avatar we should be targeting. You don't want to ask the marketing guy that, because I'm either going to say all on fours, because that's going to generate the most ROI, or I'm going to say, you know, a pedo patient, because those are the cheapest leads that we can drive. And those are the, you know, the easiest leads that we can get our hands on. And if you go, well, I want, you know, bread and butter dentistry. I want, you know, fillings and crowns. Neither of those are going to fulfill that. So you don't want to ask the marketing guy what kind of patients you want. You really want to ask the clinical staff, what kind of patients do you want? And a lot of decisions need to drive out from clinical. How do you see that getting twisted around sometimes and people getting in the wrong position where maybe the wrong people are leading some of these dental organizations or dental practices when it really should be the clinical side of things? What are your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. This is a very important topic. if we don't have a very clear understanding on who our target market is, then you make grave decisions. So number one is, as a DSO, our client is the provider that is providing the best ultimate optimal dental care for the patient, right? So we serve the clinician. Now the clinician, we have to educate the clinician. What exactly are you looking for? What is the mission, vision, objectives, and core values? Who is our target market? And we have to do this analysis, target market analysis, including demographics, geographics, and psychographics. Who is it that we're targeting? And we have to understand them. There is a buying decision process in the mind of those we are targeting. There's the need recognition phase. There's the search of options phase. There's the evaluation of alternatives phase. There's the decision making, and there's the post-decision evaluation. We have to understand and study those stages that make up that decision-making process in the mind of our consumer or our customer, our client. And then we have to do a competitive analysis. Okay, what do the others do that are very successful at and they're not good at? And then we have to do a service analysis. What services are we providing? Yes, now you've got the target market. Let's say you're a pediatric dental specialty and your target market are moms from the age of 18 to 40. All right, we have to understand their behavior. What do they do? What do they click on? Where do they hang out? What's their preferences? Because that, at the end of the day, is the decision maker. So we do the service analysis. Okay, do we provide whitening with our pedo services? Maybe the mom will do the whitening. So you have to understand that. And then there's a budget analysis. Yeah, I can spend $1 zillion on a project or a campaign, and at the end, I don't get anything in return. So all this has to be done. Target market analysis, including geographics, demographics, psychographics, competition analysis, service analysis, budget analysis.
Yeah. So, and that's great, but most dentists don't know how to do that. So like, what part of that is the clinician's job and what part is the support side? Like, where do you draw the line? How do you make that work in the real world?
Great question. First thing is they need to follow or listen to your podcast because they'll learn a little more. Second is I always take responsibility. I feel like it is up to us as a DSO to educate the clinician. What is it that you want? We don't necessarily make the decision for him, but we educate him to the right decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meaning, hey, can we write down on a piece of paper, what is your mission? Who is your target market? What are you really, really good at that you would love 1 million patients tomorrow? And what you really suck at that we don't want to do or refer out or bring another specialist to do? Once
really
they define
good.
That,
yep.
Yeah, we bring that, we help them create that avatar. But at the end, we support them. We're not pushing any treatment on them.
Yeah,
we're not
yeah.
pushing specific clientele. We're just here to support.
That's amazing. Yeah. And that's so important. And there's definitely a learning curve and you have to work through that. I mean, just as an example and again, I'm only the marketing guy, so I look through things through a very narrow lens, but even just from a dentist saying, I want X kind of patient, patients may not search that way. Patients may be searching. I'll give you an example. I hear dentists a lot of times, they'll say, I want cosmetic patients, but patients don't go online and say cosmetic dentistry. They don't search that way. They don't use those kind of words. A dentist might say, I want a lot of profies, you know, coming through because then I'm going to get more opportunities from the hygiene department. Patients don't search for that, right? And so there's this disconnect or language barrier, if you will, and someone has to bridge that. And I think that's the missing part that people miss out on a lot of times, that they don't understand that that's where the DSOs are actually providing a lot of support, is they're not just providing the infrastructure, but they're also acting as middlemen to get the thoughts from the dentist and get to the public so that they can do what they're amazing at. And then when you add on top of it, amazing dentists like yourselves who have amazing business minds, then you really see magic happen. And I think that's really, really cool. And you did a great job breaking that down. Now, I want to talk a little bit about culture. So how do you maintain culture as you have rapid growth? Because I've personally, we 5X'd our company in a very short amount of time, and it was extremely painful. And we lost clients because of it. We lost team members because of it. And it was the first time that I've ever grown like that. I had no idea what I was doing as a leader, let alone what, you know, everybody else on the team. And it was a new experience. And I had to learn the hard way. And now I have a different perspective of things. What are some of the things that you see people make mistakes as they grow really fast?
What a great question. Culture is one of the toughest things to scale, actually. There have been books written about this. But the first thing that you really want to do before even scaling is whenever you are deciding what are your core values, you have to really believe them. Because what I've seen happen is people go to these conferences or a symposium or a webinar and jot down what the other company put as core values. And they're like, oh yeah, I believe in that. Do you? So start with that. If you talk about integrity, that means doing the right thing when no one's looking. Are you? When you talk about showing up on time, when you talk about leadership mentality with head first, you're the first one in there. Are you? So let's go deep down inside and say, what is truly my core values that I'm good at? And what is the things I would like to be good at, but I'm not yet, that I need to work on? I had this issue. I didn't show up on time in meetings. And that set the tone. People started not showing up on time. And I started to think, hey, what can I do to be better at this? This is something that I wish I had, not necessarily a value that I have. So first of all, put down your core values, believe in them, and then it will show in your actions. Second, that's the first thing. Second is once you have this list done, you want to turn your company to actually work on these things. So you want this to be the source of how your systems are. For example, if you talk about patient first, okay, did we train every team member to leave everything they have and look in the patient in the eyes and say, hello, Mrs. Smith, thank you for, we were been expecting you. Here, have a seat and we'll get back with you in a second. Or whatever it is, core values you put in there, make sure your systems are actually ingrained in it. So if you say patients come first in your core values and your phone rings for 5 to 6 rings without no one answering, that's the bad example. So number one, list the core values and believe in them. Number two, build your systems around those core values to actually deliver the message, not just a plaque on the wall. Number three, communicate. If patients don't know you exist, they don't know you exist. So you send them a marketing message for the awareness phase of the IDA model because you want them to be aware that you exist, right? Same thing with the team members. If you have a core value that you're not communicating, it doesn't exist. It exists only in your head and you think you have it. So number one, come up with those core values, build them, create them, and believe in them. Number two, build your systems around those core values to deliver to the organization. Number three, communicate. Like one thing we do is every morning we have one of our pillars. We have a 30-minute or a 15-minute meeting every morning with every department with their team members to talk about one of the pillars. Integrity or conflict resolution or patient first mentality or whatever it is, we just say an example. Hey, what happened in the last month that we could be? So communicate. And then as you scale, it's going to be very hard to actually take that with you to the next level. Remember, when you were one or two or three locations, you actually saw everybody in the office almost every day.
Yeah.
And then after that, it starts becoming digital.
Yeah. So I want to talk to you a little bit about that. So there's a couple components that I've seen that are interesting. So we have 80 team members in our company, but we're 100% remote, and we were remote before remote was cool, right? So before COVID. So you have some of that in the DSO world now where there's some remote things going on and remote team members and remote support and people working all over the world. So you have that element, which is hard to build a culture around that. Then you have the DSO itself, which is usually a building somewhere that people go to. Maybe there's a call center, maybe there's, you know, IT or whatever, and that's a culture in itself. And then you have the offices that actually deal with patients that are walking through every single day, and that's culture. Right. And so you'll see where you have like amazing DSO culture and maybe a dumpster fire at one of the offices culture, right? Like, and you have all of these things that are totally different. They're not aligned, right? And it and understandably so, it's really hard. How do you bring that into like the real world and get that all lining up?
Yeah, that's, man, you've touched on really important points. It is definitely very hard. And it starts with the key word here that you mentioned that was actually my 2022 keyword is alignment. How do you actually get alignment? And it's a feature in great leaders. How do you align? Because if you think about it, as a leader, all you do all day is alignment. You're aligning the front end person. Like in your world, you're probably aligning the sales team with the actual content creator team, with the lead generator team. You're all you're doing every day is alignment. So it's the same thing. You're spending all your day in alignment. Hey, how does the RCM team in the background that are actually working on collecting the money, communicating with the front team that actually may not care a lot about collecting the money, right? So yep. That is alignment. Is okay, should we incorporate it in their bonus system? Should we mention it every single day? Should they have meetings regular every day? And the answer is all of the above. Focus on alignment and you should have a close gap.
What's one of the hardest things about alignment when you have the DSO versus the local offices?
It's consistency. So what happens typically is they, if you put a system in place, the hardest part of this being of implementing the system is it being implemented systematically, consistently. So consistency is key. So make sure whenever you build a system that is, it will work in the next year and it will work in the next 5 years. And as you scale, you can refine it. So yes, consistency is the key word.
So walk me through like how you're doing it. Are you literally going to the offices and then rolling them up to the DSOs, or do you have team members that are doing that? And just, do you have checks and balances just to make sure that things are being done on a consistent basis? How does that look?
So, every checklist or every process, think of it as a stop sign, or let's say not a stop sign, a speed sign. So let's say it says 75 and most people never drive 75. To them, the speed sign is just a suggestion. It's there because the government wants to spend money on speed signs. That's the mentality. If you don't have audits, then it never happens. If you don't have that cop on the side of the road, no one's going to drive 70. So step one is have a system that is that solves this specific issue. Number two is have an auditing process for that system. Communicate, monitor. And then the third component, KPIs. So even if your system failed at some point, the only way you will be able to tell is because one metric fell within outside of the norm. So if you have the system in place, that's the speed limit sign. You have the cop at the side of the road, which you have the auditing component. And then you have the data that supports whether this is working or not.
How fast you're going. Yeah, that's how fast you're going. Yeah, I love that. How often are you auditing? Do you audit every system at a different pace? Or are you building that into the system? Or is it just a regular audit that you just, like I've heard the Golden Gate Bridge, they paint it. And by the time they're done painting it, they just restart and go back and paint it again, right? Like, because it's so long. I don't know if that's true or not, but is that basically what you're doing? Is just like, we're going to go through and audit everything and then we're going to go back and audit it all again because it's time to do it again.
No, so auditing is actually built in the system. So for example, let's say patient charts, okay? Every day there is a team member that stays behind that actually audits the charts in a few components to make sure that we are compliant with all the regulatory bodies. And then that audit is actually being audited by the regional manager. They look and see, was the patient's chart audited? So it's actually built in the system. So someone stays behind extra 30 minutes to go through that process. It's a part of the process. And yes, since they are auditing something that they may be a part of, because they are one of the assistants that actually worked on these patients, someone else has to come in and audit. So that doesn't necessarily have to be a seasonal thing. It can be built in the system where it's daily, weekly, monthly, or whatever the frequency.
Got it. Perfect. That's really helpful. And then I'm actually going to use that. I'm going to build that into some things that we're doing. So what does it mean to you to build a culture first mentality? What does that actually mean for dental groups?
It means that you actually walk the walk and you walk the talk. if you are, it goes back to the integrity piece. Are you trying to train others on some things that you are lacking? So first, you have to have the core values integrated in your company first. And then you communicate that to the team. And then you have the KPIs to support that it's been there. Culture first means that if you and I, Gary, are going to start a DSO together, we're going to sit down in the beginning, whiteboarding this and saying, hey, what values do we have? What do we really want? What can you contribute that I cannot? Mm. What can I contribute that you cannot? What are we going to live by? Because believe it or not, partnership can be tougher than marriages. You can easily get out of a marriage. Mm-hmm. But you could be, it's going to be completely hard to get out of a partnership. So if you don't have those culture first mentality and the alignment on the core values before you even start the business, guess what? 5 years down the road, 10 offices down the road, you're going to have a big gap.
If you're not culture first, what kind of relationship would you have? What are other options besides culture first relationship?
Transactional. So, yeah. And you see that everywhere. You see that, hey, team members are here just for a paycheck. Hey, they came in and said that we were never trained. We didn't know we had that piece of software. We didn't know we had that piece of equipment. There's just dysfunction after dysfunction after dysfunction. But if we have that North Star culture first mentality, typically the keyword again, alignment happens.
Yep, 100%. Okay, so now, what is something that I didn't cover that I should have covered with you?
I think you've covered the bunch. This is great. I love this podcast. A lot of great learning experiences.
That's awesome. I love this stuff. I love especially with somebody like yourself. Again, you have the business side, you have the dental, the clinical side, you have a totally different perspective on like what America is and the way that you just look at the way things are set up from a good and a negative and all that. I really, really enjoy talking with you today. I've listened to you talk all the time. So, but it was really a joy just to put it out there and get it recorded today. If someone wanted to get a hold of you and just chat with you or learn more about you, what's the best way to do that?
Tarek@cdp.dental is my email. Feel free to email me. And if I'm a little bit late in emailing back, please forgive me. I am about a week behind, but I'll eventually get back to you.
That's awesome. That's so good to know. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Gary. Have a fabulous rest of your day.
You too. Thanks so much for watching today. If you'd like to learn more about SMC or the guests that you listen to, please visit us at smcnational.com.